On this episode, we discuss Legends of Oz, : Dorothy's Return, : The Quickening. Everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
Hey there, I'm Stuart Wellington. Wait, start over.
No, hi, okay, I'm Ellie Kalin.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
Stuart, were you coming on to the listener and then you thought better of it?
You're like, no, I'm just kidding, unless you're into it, in which case I'm totally not kidding.
It's like I got close and she turned around and she's a zombie. And I'm like, no thanks, ma'am. Not into it.
But you're still going to introduce yourself.
Yeah, and I'm still going to call her ma'am.
You're polite.
You're not rude, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You're just not interested in that.
Why are you saying it like that's weird?
I don't know. I mean, like, part of me is like, that's prejudiced. Part of me is like, yeah, you don't want to, like, ask a zombie out for a date.
I mean, unless they're into it. Like, it's a joke, but unless they're into it.
Yeah. Oh,
we should totally go out with those zombies as a joke.
Yeah, I think it's time for a little bit of housekeeping up front, guys. Uh-huh.
So
if you sent a letter in responding to Radio Zork, we haven't gotten to them yet. Maybe by the end of the hour. We'll figure it out.
Do not know whether you want to open the door or you don't want to open the door.
We're just at... If you're using the key on the lock,
that's true.
Or do
you choose to wait for another visitor to arrive?
Or you might choose to just lick the lock. We don't know.
Maybe you should
try to rust it.
Maybe you just want to stare at that door for a while. Maybe you just really like doors.
Yeah, maybe you're into doors. Like, maybe doors goes like, fishing.
Maybe this is like a Bridges of Madison County situation, and you're just going around photographing scenic old doors.
People do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
People do that.
We don't know.
What if you're a door mouse? A mouse who loves doors. For sex.
Wait, is that what they are?
You read Alice in Wonderland, right?
Yes.
So we watched the sequel to Alice in Wonderland tonight.
We did not at all do that.
First off.
First off, Waltz.
This is a podcast. I know that you know this already. If you've downloaded it.
Not if someone has tied you up and blindfolded you and you're just hearing this, you might think we're in the room with you. But we're not. It depends on how good their sound system
don't
is.
Don't panic. There's only one person in the room with you. Your kidnapper.
If
which
they're
case,
there.
You should panic.
They might have turned the podcast on to entertain you while they went to the store.
To confuse you.
To get more lotion to put in the basket.
You know, now, pop your thumb out of its socket.
Okay.
And start wiggling your hand out of your restraints.
Yeah.
Okay, now grab that box cutter you have jammed into your ankle.
We'll continue with more tips on how to escape your kidnapper as the podcast goes on.
Yeah.
But for now, we just want to explain, this is a podcast where we watch bad movies.
Are there
movies.
Any clearly marked exits? Because those are the doors you're going to want to take.
This is not a bit. No. I know you're asking yourself that because you've heard this podcast before.
But then they'd know it was a podcast.
Yeah, it's all.
Well, they thought the earlier episodes were podcasts, and this might be a live taping that they
arrived at somehow.
Yeah.
Point is,
it's like something where you're kidnapped and they put you in front of a live audience because the kidnapper gets off on the thrill of having their kidnappee in front of like a bunch
of
people
of those,
who could
like,
possibly save them.
I see,
like Dario Argento's opera.
Oh, I thought you were talking about that Diane Lane movie that we watched. Uncatchable or whatever it was
Uncatchable,
called.
Uncatchable. That's a good name for a parody movie. Uncatchable.
That's the villain of Catch That Kid.
Those fears.coms.
It was Untraceable, I think.
Yeah,
right?
All right. So
Uncatchable. There's a bad guy. The baddest guy in all the world.
And the bad news about him is he's uncatchable.
He's been categorized as uncatchable.
Interpol has called him uncatchable.
Dun da 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 dun da da. My name's Mick Gorin. I'm the leader of the Catchables, a secret international police squad tasked with catching the worst criminals of all. The code name, Uncatchables.
Have we caught that kid? Yes, we have.
Your mission, if you choose to catch it, the common cold.
I mean, that's not that hard.
No, it's pretty easy to catch.
Starting out easy. That's like a training thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Starting out easy.
Boost your confidence in catching things, and then later on you catch the uncatchable.
Yeah, you got to start with, it's like a starter parkour. You start with small jumps. Just little jumps.
What, like just hopping?
Yeah, you like hop onto a rock.
You hop on one foot.
Yeah, you don't want to do big jumps right away.
Starter
your
parkour.
Your legs will be ripped off or something.
if you're jumping into a shark's mouth.
Starter parkour.
It's classic parkour.
I like starter parkour. I like is when the James Bond movies are really running out of names for characters.
I think
here's your partner. Starter parkour.
There's a YouTube series out there about like introducing people to parkour, and it's like the first couple steps are, you know, like little jumps.
See, I thought that you were like, I was just imagining that there was like a starter parkour set, and you buy
like
it from Amazon,
and it's just, and it's like, shoes,
like a fire hydrant.
It's just a step. Yeah,
it's a Nerf fire hydrant.
You're not going to get a lot of give on that fire hydrant.
It's a map of, I don't know, like Paris or something.
It's what it is. It's a collection of Family Circus comic strips where little Billy is running around town because he invented parkour.
It was Jeffy who did that.
I don't give a
shit. Damn it, Elliot. All our credibility is out the window.
They're all
now.
The same
all I know
kid.
It was not me.
They're all the same kid, and I'm not so sure it was Jeffy.
It was
I think
Jeffy.
Both of them took around the bout circuitous routes.
Billy's the oldest one.
I know he takes over the comic strip sometimes.
Jeffy's the one who runs around.
Who's the PJ's mute kid?
PJ's the little kid.
No, who's the girl?
And the girl is
Girl
Fussy.
Circus.
Oh,
together
man.
They're the Catchables. In order to catch this criminal, we're going to need an uncatchable kid. Mm-hmm. Get us little Jeffy or Billy or whoever the shit it is. Anyway, so that's
very catchable because you just follow that little dotted line around.
But he invented parkour. He's jumping over branches. He's underneath doghouses.
What to call Slylock Fox out of retirement.
But he thought
and Max Mouse?
No,
no,
he said
he
died. Yeah,
that's why,
that's
went
why he
retired.
Yeah, because he couldn't solve the murder of Max Mouse.
When he found tormenting him ever since.
When he found Max Mouse's empty skin hanging on a coat hook at his house.
Untold stories of the comic book comics page.
Oh, Slylock Fox.
What? Oh, Wily Weasel or whatever your fucking name is. Will you ever win?
Yeah. I mean, Slylock Fox was at the height, too, because he had just solved the case of Mr. Lockhorn murdering Mrs. Lockhorn.
Sure.
Really, well, what was pretty
Rose
easy.
Long time wasn't coming. Rose.
He solved the mystery of what makes Fred Bassett funny. Turns out it's nothing.
Nothing. And when he caught Marmaduke running that prostitute ring.
Sure.
So, point is, we watch a bad movie and then we talk about it. That's
why
what this
would
podcast.
You harm a Duke? That's Marmaduke pleading for his life.
Yeah, and Slylock Fox just shoots
He's like,
him.
You can talk?
All this time, you could talk and you understood that we didn't want you on that chair?
This is Howard Hughes all over again. Howard Hughes, famous recluse dog.
Yeah, he's a dog with tissue boxes on his feet collecting his urine in jars. Yeah.
He would urinate on things to show his dominance over that area, but he would save the urine.
Yeah, he'd save
time.
The carpet samples of the top floor penthouse of his Las Vegas hotel.
Anyway.
So we're a podcast that watches a bad movie and then we talk about it, right?
And tonight we watched... What was it called? Legends of Oz, Dorothy's Return.
The Revenge of Dorothy. Oz, it's a legend?
I think it was called...
Dorothy 2, Two Shades of Blue.
I think it was called Dorothy's Back. Watch out, suckers. Legends of Oz. It was called Legends of Oz, colon, Dorothy's Return.
Okay.
Now, the implication
like
is...
Dorothy is like the villain.
Yeah. Oz
revenge.
Is... Well, maybe Dorothy came back and wanted
Dorothy.
To build a bunch of condos and went in places and the Tin Man had to break dance or something.
Tear down all the bikini car washes in Oz.
Tear them down. all those mom and pop bikini.
I gotta say, most of the time the bikinis get torn off pretty easily. It's not hard to tear down one of those car washes.
Yeah. So
now
we had a big debate over whether we should watch this because I had trouble believing it was released in movie theaters, but apparently it was, and it's got a lot of big name stars
to a whopping $3 million opening weekend. Right.
Look,
total box office according to Wikipedia was $18 million.
I just wanted to run this. I just wanted to run this down for you guys. Now imagine there was a movie. Imagine there's a movie that starred Lea Michele.
Should we close our eyes?
Now, who's Lea Michele?
She's on Glee, but she also was a big star from Spring Awakening on Broadway.
Oh, then I must have seen her in that because I saw that. Oh, so we once again have an actor in the film that I saw on the stage.
Damn it.
Now, Spring Awakening.
Treading the boards.
tripping the lights dramatic in a musical adaptation of a German drama.
No, but imagine.
Sprung of Awakening. Nung.
Imagine there was a movie with her. It had also has Dan Aykroyd, Kelsey Grammer.
Oh, a huge star like Danny Aykroyd?
No, wait, Dan Aykroyd.
Huge stars like Jim Belushi.
Let's just let me
James
run.
Belushi.
But let me run it down. You got Dan Aykroyd. You got Kelsey Grammer, Martin Short, Hugh Dancy,
Jim Belushi,
Oliver Platt,
Brian
Patrick Stewart,
Brian Blessed,
Bernie Peters,
Tom Kenny. You would think
Martin Short. Did you mention Martin Short?
I did.
Because he's in it, too.
You think this was a wonderful, magical movie.
No, you would think it was a movie that had a lot of money to spend, and you'd be right, apparently. But you'd say, okay.
That's an impressive roster.
It is an impressive cast. Like, it's at Food Fight levels of impressiveness.
No, it's
there are no stars in heaven, so they're all in Legends of Oz.
This has Brian Blessed and Patrick Stewart in it. This has noted Shakespearean actors.
Yeah, because if there's anything we know about British Shakespearean actors, it's they only make good movies. Never do they take a paycheck to do some crap. I will say this, though. The actors in this movie, for the most part, except for Bernie Peters, really do their...
I don't know why you got to call her that.
That like, okay, Daddy Pete's.
Okay,
sure. Bernadette Peters is the one person who is clearly not trying. Everybody else puts a surprising amount of effort into their roles.
Yeah, they are really,
selling
this material.
Martin Short has like three songs.
Yeah.
And he's belting it.
Oliver Platt as Owliver Fat. He's a fat owl.
He plays a fat owl. Now,
but at one point he sings a song in like a weird Jamaican accent.
Brian Blessed is a jawbreaker headed judge, and he is easily the high point of this movie. He is selling the shit out of
it. You're saying
that
it's not Patrick Stewart as a talking tree who's been turned into a boat telling a bird, sing a song for me.
That is an amazing moment that I hope that we can come back to.
Yeah, so let's talk about what this movie is. Okay, so we all are familiar with the movie The Wizard of Oz. It is, in my opinion,
it's about a wizard in Oz.
About as perfect as a family movie can be. That's just my opinion. Let me go out on a limb here and say The Wizard of Oz is a national treasure.
Let me go out on a limb here and say Citizen Kane is a pretty good movie.
But
you said family movie. Would you say Citizen Kane's a family movie?
I'm not arguing
If it's
that,
my family, then yes. Sammy loved it.
He loves that monologue about the girl with the white dress.
Oh, he found it heartbreaking. Yeah. He thought Joseph Cotton was not too hammy as the older version of Leland. Wizard of Oz, let's just state outright. You guys, I'm sure, love it. I personally have a great deal of love for it.
It's a beautiful movie.
It's a gorgeous movie. It leaves me in tears every time. Not even like that it's sad or even because of the movie. Just how kind of flawless to me that movie is for the most part.
And you're saying this movie surpassed it
way. I'm saying there's a new champion of Oz.
Well, you're not left unmoved because you know deep down that it required a sequel.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is I'm like...
What about The Return?
I'm like, the one flaw of this movie is it leaves the story too open-ended. What if...
What's with all these movies and their trilogies? Am I right?
Am I right, folks? Is this thing on? This guy knows what I'm talking about.
Straighten necktie.
Yeah. But so anyway...
Wipe down your hair part.
I will say that I...
Wipe down your hair part.
Yeah.
Oh, my hair part's too greasy. I gotta wipe it down.
So going into this movie...
Gotta dab it with a fucking towelette.
Going into this movie, which is an animated sequel to The Wizard of Oz based on a book written by the great-grandson of the author of the original Wonderful Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
One can only assume that he unearthed like a vault that had the specks of this story, and he turned them into a novel.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. It was all based on the original.
Or he summoned up the spirit of his dad using dread necromancy, and then he had his dad's dad summoned as well. So he had multiple ghosts summoning each other.
Multiple generations of Oz writing Baums.
Like a Russian doll of necromantic ghost summoning.
But it's kind of like, I have to assume the Baum family is kind of like the Herbert family. And then it was like Frank Herbert wrote Dune and then a bunch of Dune books. And then the family was like, just because he died doesn't mean we got to jump off the Dune money train.
The spice is life, bro.
Come on. Let's pump out some more Dune books. Or
these still suits aren't going to pay for themselves.
Or like Christopher Tolkien, where it's like, I don't know what law it is that says if your dad or ancestor wrote fantasy or science fiction books, you got to keep going. It gives you license. The way that I have to assume that Ernest Hemingway's kids were never like, hey, what if the sun also rose again? What if they said good hello again to arms?
What about two old men in the sea?
There's a lot of fish in that sea. Some of them got to be bigger.
There's a lot of old men out there. There's something about fantasy series that, or it's like how And that the idea that this continues in the bloodline, I guess, like midichlorians or something. The same way that the movie version of War of the World of the time trap, the time machine, not World, the movie version of the time machine that Guy Pearce was in was directed by like the grandson of H.G. Wells, as if he had, because he has Wells blood in him, he can, yep, he knows the story better than anyone else. Anyway,
he was going back to that Wells, guys. He went back.
Is it possible to fire you, Dan, and still have you run all the equipment and put the show up online?
It's possible.
Anything's possible in Oz.
So speaking of Oz, so this is it's based on a book, which is true, but it's the sequel story. So in the land,
sequel.
So after 20 minutes of credits,
there's a lot of opening credits because kids love opening credits.
And didn't you say that each of the songs had like an individual credit?
Each song in the movie, and they're like, five of them gets an individual on-screen credit with the person who wrote that song. One of them is written by Bryan Adams. The rest, I didn't recognize the names of the songwriters. But it's a long credit sequence. There's two directors credited. They each get their own title. That it doesn't say directed by so-and-so and so-and-so. It says directed by this guy. That flies off screen. Directed by this guy.
I wonder whether like the two or three scenes that I really actually enjoyed a lot were directed by one guy, and then they're like, oh, this guy's too good. We got to fire him off this project.
That's probably what happened.
For the shitty stuff.
That's probably exactly. Let's bring in the shitty guy. So it's a sequel. So, you know, the Emerald City, we left it last time with Scarecrow's running the place, as he is in some of the later Oz books. The Tin Woodsman's there. The Lion is there. Mm-hmm. You got Dan Aykroyd as the Scarecrow. You got Kelsey Grammer as the Tin Woodsman. You got Jim Belushi as the Lion. And
channeling
let me tell you,
a great John Goodman. Yep.
None of them do the voices of the characters in the movie, which is the original movie, just fine. But they're still doing silly voices, except for Kelsey Grammer, who just kind of sounds like himself.
Yeah, exactly. He sounds like Fraser Crane.
Or Sideshow Hank Bob. McCoy. Or Sideshow Bob. It's the same voice every time. He sounds like his most famous role, the captain in Down Periscope. I got the direction wrong.
Something that Kelsey Grammer notoriously never does.
Yes. He always
knows which way a periscope should
the
go.
Whole time I'm lost in this, I'm like, why is Boss running around talking about how he has a heart now? You know, from the hit show Boss, starring Kelsey Grammer.
Yep, because you watch it blindfolded. And you're like, who's kidnapped me? Kidnapped you to watch this shitty movie?
Why is one half of that Kelsey Grammer Martin Lawrence project doing the voice for this?
What was that?
I don't know. It was one of those
Are they
shows,
like TV lawyers or?
I feel like it was one of those shows that like was on that Tyler Perry's Head of the Family or whatever the fuck.
Wait a minute.
Hold on a second.
Wait a minute.
It was Madea's Head of the Family reunion.
It was on that same like idea though. Like they were like going to just do 100 episodes of it really fast. So it could be sold
like Anger Management or something?
Yeah.
Because, well, Kelsey Grammer might have been the producer on that. Like he's produced a couple of black actor shows that are for an African-American audience.
Yeah.
Like there's that one that's called like Girlfriends or something like that that Kelsey Grammer is the executive producer on.
You'd think though that like after like Cheers and Frasier, like you wouldn't have run through all that money already that he has to do like a.
What are you talking about?
I don't think what run through the money.
Well, no, but like to do like one of those like 100 episode cash in type projects.
One, he was probably the producer, in which case he'd make a lot of money. And two, this is a man with some serious chemical addiction problems, and he has lost a lot of money over the years.
That's
but anyway,
true.
Kelsey Grammer is barely in the movie, so I don't know why we're talking about him so much.
I don't know. Apparently, we're just like, come at us, Kelsey Grammer. Come at us. Yeah.
Come
the
on,
aspersions
Kelsey. We're real scared of a guy with a name that is Kelsey.
Immediately recognizable? I'm kind of scared of that. What is he, a villain?
That's
villain?
Fair.
No,
but anyway,
he's got a lot of money to
anyway,
sue us
we're
with.
Literally 2 seconds into the movie.
Sure.
Our favorite characters from the old movie are in trouble because an evil character called the Jester, who looks just like the Marvel villain, the Jester.
Mac Tonight.
He looks a little bit like Mac Tonight at one point when he turns into a crescent moon. And later he has an exaggerated lipstick smile on him like the Jokester, as Stuart calls him.
No, he's
played
a real,
by Keith Ledger.
He's a real
in the Dark Knot.
He's a real jokester Harley Quinn combo at the end of the movie.
Don Knotts impression.
The Dark Knots. Yeah,
I'm not the villain you need. Wait a minute.
That's why would he go that?
The villain I need.
Harvey Dent. Can we trust him?
I've had a little to drink tonight.
The Dark Knots.
The Dark Knots. Somebody make that poster. And you know it's going to be Don Knotts with his, his mouth in a perfect circle, like, ooh.
The Incredible Mr. Dark Knight.
What does it say about that movie that I remember? That I liked it a lot, and I can remember almost no dialogue that Batman has in the whole movie, yeah. Except for Harvey Dent, can we trust him? Which I think I'm just remembering from that Pete Holmes video. Anyway, the Jester has stolen the broomstick of the Wicked Witch of the West, which I guess has some sort of eldritch non-Euclidean power in it.
Yeah.
And he has the flying monkeys at his command, and he has some kind of glowing globe of powerful energy magic.
So what's his deal? What's his jam? What's
it turns out later that he is the Wicked Witch of the West's brother, okay. And she put a curse on him that made him a jester, and he wants power now.
So are they kind of
like... And he turns people into marionettes.
Are they kind of like the witches and warlocks of Oz? Are they kind of like the drow society in Forgotten Realms where the males are not allowed to... they're forbidden to practice magic, Elliot?
Well... You asked me a question that I have no idea how to answer. I have neither the grounding in the Oz books nor the grounding in Forgotten Realms. So I'm going to say yes, I guess.
Okay, interesting, interesting.
It does seem that Elphalba Belba, or whatever her name, Elphalbador, what, you know, what's her name in Wicked? Elphalba? Mm-hmm. Elphalba?
Elphalba.
Some 14-year-old girl write in and tell me what the character's name is in Wicked. Yeah, Wicket, the Ewok musical. But
Wicked story.
Yum yum. But it's a hit Broadway musical called Yub! ! It's an Ewok yub, musical. Yub? So two thumbs yub.
By the way,
says the dead Siskel and Ebert.
We've reached the point in the podcast to give another tip to anyone who's been kidnapped. So open up the window in the bathroom of the place where you've been kidnapped, so your kidnapper thinks that you've gone out there.
Pull a good deed on them.
But instead, go out through the other exit.
Or hide in a closet.
Here's another thing to remember. Exit through the gift shop. That's how you can escape a museum or a captor's lair.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's how,
and it gives you access to overpriced, I don't know, shirts.
I mean, that's the thing.
If you're Mr. Brainwash, you're going to do very well.
You're going to want a souvenir of the time you were kidnapped.
Maybe like a zoo book.
A zoo book. Yeah, subscription only magazine zoo books.
Or like a Zoobly
zoo
book.
No, you can get those zoo books in gift shops of zoos.
Can you?
Yeah.
I only got it through the mail because I was a big zoo book subscriber as a kid. And I got to tell you, there's a problem when you subscribe to it for years as a kid because there's only so many issues. So I must have gotten like old world vultures a number of times, or like, you know, alligators, that kind of thing. I do remember there was one called New World Monkeys. I think there's Old World Monkeys and New World Monkeys. And I was too young to really know what that meant. Just old monkeys.
Which do you prefer?
I really can't
old
tell
world
the difference.
Or new
I
world
can't tell the difference between those
interesting
monkeys.
Let me write this down under Elliot.
Put it in my file. Anyway, so they need help because despite being a courageous lion, a robo man, and some kind of pumpkin head character type figure,
some kind of,
they can't defeat this
some
jester.
Kind of straw construct.
Some sort of Alex Max type who
can super
dissolve and then come back together. And he's a super genius. They can't defeat the Jester. They need Dorothy the Witch Killer. And so we go to Kansas, where the tornado from the previous movie and previous story, and they say, years have passed for us here in Oz, but it'll seem to Dorothy like it's just the next day.
Yeah.
So Dorothy has had little time to deal with her adventure in Oz.
Yeah.
She wakes up in a
stressful situation.
Yes, to say the least. She's got PTSD
up
the wazoo.
Somebody.
Yeah. She killed two people.
Yeah.
She dropped a house on one and then saw their feet curl up in like that weird thing.
I mean, to this day, that creeps me out.
And then she melted. I bet you she can't take a shower maybe ever again.
Yeah, even if it was justifiable homicide, it's a hell of a thing to kill a woman. To paraphrase Unforgiven.
Yeah. Anyway, let's keep moving.
You have to steal its soul.
Yeah.
With a Polaroid camera.
Sorry for referring to a witch as it, but I didn't want to genderfy
it. I think that's fair enough.
Didn't want to genderfy?
Yeah, genderfy it.
You don't want to genderfy it by moving into the witch's neighborhood?
Yeah.
Genderfication is when they take a neighborhood that's totally dudes and and women start coming in and turning all the shooting galleries
into
stores?
Boutiques or whatever.
Boutiques?
Yep. Boutiques. Boutiques where you buy
some kind of sticker
designer bow staffs.
Wait a minute.
Boutique.
So
It's the next... Lady Donatello shops. Yep.
Would you like that gift wrapped with a bow? Oh, I see what you did there. Yes.
Dan, edit all of this. Okay. So it's the next day. Dorothy's house has been destroyed by a tornado. Now, this is taking place in modern day. So her Aunt Em looks like Anna Gasteyer as that public radio character that she does. And her uncle, what's the uncle's name?
I don't care.
Let's say. It's Uncle Owen. Yeah, he just looks like some guy.
He's a moisture farmer.
Now, the house is wrecked, but it's not so bad. They can fix it. Dorothy's like, we can fix it. We can fix it. I swear.
And they like give it up. They're like, fuck this.
They're like, no. And an evil appraiser comes by, voiced by Martin Short, who has classic devil beard. It's even pointed at the tip. And he's got a little henchman who's measuring stuff. He says, this house is unsafe.
Who could be like a familiar? We have no idea.
Yeah, we don't know. He's like that little monkey man that the bad guy in The Goon has.
Sure.
That little cat guy who's always depressed all the time.
He's a tiny homunculus.
So the appraiser says, this place is not safe. This property is condemned. You have to go to the emergency shelter, and I guess I'll buy the house from you at a bargain basement price when you go to the condemned building sales fair that I'm hosting in town.
It's a little like, you know, like Star Wars having so much have to do about like trade agreements or whatever. Like in this fantasy world, you don't necessarily want to have to get into the idea of like understanding what these like deeds mean
I would say that having the deed to a farm be taken by the bank, for instance, is a long-standing plot.
But that would be a much simpler thing than what is shown here.
This is still not that difficult. The guy's clearly evil. He's trying to steal their house.
Okay.
And all the adults, being grown-ups, are like, well, I guess we got to go along with it. Nothing we can do. We're homeless now. But Dorothy is like, no, we can't listen to this. That's when a rainbow totally attacks her. Mm-hmm. She's chased by a rainbow.
She tastes it.
She tastes the rainbow hard. Wow. She is tripping hard.
Tripping the light fantastic.
When she wakes up, she can't even see anymore. But the rainbow picks her up and takes her to Oz, where she is going to save the day, but she's left. She needs to get to the Emerald City. For some reason, the machine in the Emerald City that brings her there doesn't take her to the Emerald City.
I think that they get interrupted in the middle of it somehow. I think that the
what, does a jester pop in?
Yeah, I was paying a lot of attention. I think the monkeys like show
Dan's
up.
Dan's eyes were glued to his phone.
That's true. But I think that the monkey.
I don't know what kind of naked pictures Dan was looking at on his phone.
I think,
but his eyes were literally glued.
Wasn't the Legends of Oz DeviantArt page, which we just looked at.
If you want to see a lot of drawings of a sexy cowgirl.
Yeah, Dorothy envisioned as a sexy cowgirl, sometimes with a buffalo friend.
But rarely wearing pants.
Oh, never.
I will admit I was not paying attention. Some of it was I was examining the Wikipedia page to see the storied history of this production. But at that point, I think that the villains came in.
And interrupted the rainbow ride.
So the rainbow like deposited Dorothy where she should not have been.
She landed in a forest where she met her first new character, aside from the jester, Wiser, who is an owl whose character trait is that he is extremely fat.
He is super fat.
He is gargantuously fat.
Imagine the fattest owl you've ever seen and then quadruple it.
And then add 100 more owls to it.
Sure.
Each of which is fatter than the last.
Like, I have to respect this movie by showing me a much fatter owl than I ever thought I would see.
Well, that's the advertised movie. They say, you've never seen an owl this fat. One of the top 10 fat owl films.
I'm fantasizing about taking the egg that owl hatched from and turning it into a delicious omelet.
Owl omelet?
Exactly.
And that's so, like you would have to be a Wimpy style comic character to eat that omelet.
Sure, a Dagwood style omelet.
I'm not sure that Stuart isn't a Wimpy style comic character.
That's true.
So Wiser is
incredibly fat owl.
He's
also
a very fat kind of.
Did somebody spray paint?
He's got like an Argyle.
He has like an Argyle sweater pattern on the top half of his chest.
It's just feathers.
Is that part of his plumage?
I think it's to get across the idea that he is something of an intellectual.
He's a fat nerd.
He also has little pince-nez glasses,
which stay on. I mean, I guess that's
even when they go over a waterfall. But that's just good pince-nez fitting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
His nez is really pinced. His in those.
You can't pinch that nez anymore than it already is. Now, Wiser can't fly, for obvious reasons. He is hideously fat, morbidly obese.
For fatness reasons.
He tries to flap his wings. He's going to die of a heart attack.
He bounces even, very well.
He can't even fly.
He's like a gummy bear, bouncing like, here and there and everywhere.
Even on like an airplane, he can't fly. Like they're like, you're going to have to buy three seats.
You're
going
to have to buy a cargo plane.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You are one and a half Kevin Smith, sir.
Yeah. We need to organize our own Operation Dumbo Drop just for you.
So they pass through first Candy Country, where which is a place that's all candy.
Crazy acid free candy.
The jester says, I'm going to trick them. All the signs in Candy Country say, don't eat the candy. The jester casts the most magic of spells to change the signs to say, eat the candy. They go crazy. Dude, in the kind of acid freak out I haven't seen
misdirection.
Since, I think, Roger Corman's The Trip. Yeah, subtle misdirection. Yeah, and
they're like kids in a candy store in a town made of candy,
and they eat a lot of candy to a song about candy. That
this
the
is the second
sings.
Song in the movie, right?
Yeah,
the first one was the heart-stopping rendition of
I don't know what was the song.
It's their this movie's version of Over the Rainbow, and okay. It's not very good and not very.
It's
memorable.
About building.
So the
like,
candy.
As I said,
song
as I said
while
we were watching it, this is their answer. It's a tough row to hoe because Somewhere Over the Rainbow is probably. I would say the best song ever written for a movie. Like, mm-hmm. What else is better? Like, what's at that level even? Like, I don't know.
Time goes by, maybe.
The Dream Warriors theme from Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3.
I mean, that's, but yeah, Bob maybe. Duncan. And I assume, Between the Moon and
Big
New York
Trouble
City.
Big Trouble in Little China. The from best the movie Big Trouble in Little China.
I mean, that's the only real, competitor. But they have, like, a very bland, kind of not as good song.
Hold on.
What do you
expect? How about, harsh critique.
How about Take Control from Ghostbusters 2?
Oh, wait a minute.
Whatever it's called.
Saving the Day?
No.
No, that's Ghostbusters 2.
Take Control.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Too hot to handle. Too cold to hold. Call the Ghostbusters and they ain't control.
So, I gotta say, I'm not surprised Ghostbusters 3, they want to get off the ground, because the Ghostbusters movies were a cottage industry of originally written songs. Each one had like three new songs in it.
Oh, man.
About Ghostbusters.
I got to say, I kind of like Take Control more than I like Ray Parker Jr.
You are an idiot. You are a madman.
Hey, man.
Maybe that is such a catchy song. It captures, despite knowing
it's
only...
It's a ripoff of I Want a New Drug by Huey Lewis.
It's a huge improvement on I Want a New Drug. I would say this. You've been told you got to write a song for a movie called Ghostbusters. What's it about? It's about Ghostbusters. What does that mean? The title of the movie is Ghostbusters. Write a song for it. And you write a song that perfectly captures the feel of that movie. That you are a genius.
That is a movie where old people will unironically shout out, Bustin' Makes Me Feel Good.
But what about
that's right up
if
there
I want
with,
a song
that's
about...
That's right up there with the poster for The Thing, where they said, we're going to make a remake of The Thing. What happens in it? It's called The Thing. Paint us a poster.
But what if I want a song that's all about Vigo? The master of evil. Try to battle my boys. It's not legal. Whoa, whoa, way.
I mean, wait, what if you want a song about love? You're not going to get that from the Ghostbusters theme either. I mean, that's not a correct criticism, Dan. I went to see this movie, Guardians of the Galaxy, but what if I wanted a movie about the effects of Alzheimer's on a family? Well, then this is not the movie to go to.
What if I wanted a Duplass Brothers-style low-key comedy?
Nobody goes to a movie theater and argues
I went to go see Phantom of the Paradise, but I wanted to see an animated film about a young deer that grows up. Well, that's not a fair criticism. You knew perfectly well going in that was not the movie you were seeing. To request a song about Viggo of Carpathia from a movie that does not feature that character is ridiculous on its face.
Even so, sir, I demand my money back.
Sir, I will give you no refund and you are banned from this theater.
All right, free popcorn then.
I know you have no negotiating platform right now.
Small Coke.
Will you take this promotional lobby card for the film Pure Luck starring Martin Short and Danny Glover if it will get you to leave?
I will.
No, I have to apologize.
It's the scene where Martin Short is puffed up from a bee sting. Don't show it to children. It will frighten them. Now, Assistant Manager Stewart, you had something you wanted to say.
I was going to say the postcard is
from
it's missing the U because the U, I guess, fell out of the title, pure luck, and landed on somebody's head, I guess. I don't know.
So it says P, Ray Luck.
And it landed on Martin Short's head, but somehow that helped him solve the mystery.
I don't know. I didn't see the movie.
As someone who saw the movie, I can't answer any questions either. I know that it ends with Martin Short.
Somebody
about
told me it was a comedy. I don't know. I think they're lying.
Okay.
Now, is he playing the same character in this in Captain Ron? That's what I want
Not
to know.
Not at all. Not at all. They are brothers.
Wow.
Twin brothers.
And they're the sons of
they're
the
twin sitters.
They're twin sitters. And they're the sons of the Martin Short character from Three Amigos.
Bodybuilders.
Oh, man. Fuck the fucking Pixar theory. I want this unified theory of Martin Short.
All
movies.
Of Martin Short. So how do we fit Jack Frost the from Martin the Santa Claus 3 into this?
I don't know. I do know that this movie they watched tonight is part of the Martin Shortiverse.
It is. Somebody at home needs to make the family tree of how all of Martin Short's characters are connected. How is Clifford related to Ed Grimley Jr.? How is his character from Inherent Vice related to what's another Martin Short character?
His character from Arrested Development.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where he's the like.
He's got the weird bodybuilder guy, the old bodybuilder.
I forgot about that character. Not one of their stronger moments. Ironic because he's a very strong character.
Yes.
Okay, so they eat the candy. They're arrested by. Let's get back to the movie. Seems like a very sweet man.
So after this trippy dreamscape.
They are arrested for eating the candy by
featuring
Marshall.
Floating jester heads.
By our next big character, Marshall Mallow, who is a.
Some kind of a rap star?
Yeah, he's Marshall. Marshall, he grew up at eight Mallow, the bad part of Candy Detroit. And he wins a lot of rap battles.
Detreat, dude.
Detreat. Now, Marshall Mallow is the by-the-book, Hugh Dancy-voiced marshmallow military policeman who arrests them with his chocolate cops that we couldn't tell if they were dogs or they had mustaches.
He takes time out from his relentless pursuit of Hannibal to arrest these miscreants.
Yep.
He's like, yeah, this is my design.
Yep.
A world of candy. People eating the candy.
His specialty is catching crooks
them.
Who eat things.
Crooks, I imagine he doesn't want them to eat it because that Candyland is the elaborate serial killer plot. Like, because every serial killer goes after puts on these elaborate pageant productions. This guy has turned all his victims into candy, and that's the scene of the crime.
Yeah.
Nothing, I mean, I love that show, but nothing beats ridiculousness like the idea of Lance Henriksen as an old man just climbing a ladder to build a totem pole of bodies that's like 25 feet high.
No, you can't believe that this exists in a real world. It exists
in the crazy high opera world of Hannibal.
Yeah, the Thomas Harris universe.
The Harrisverse.
Yeah.
In which Hannibal and Black Sunday both exist in the same universe.
No kidding. Oh, a book I read part of.
Now, they're brought before Judge Drawbreaker, played by Brian Blessed, a judge with a jawbreaker for
and
a head.
Dare I say, I mean, he's competing with Patrick Stewart, but he might be the finest work in this movie.
Yeah, sure. He really puts his all into the jawbreaker character from the one scene he's in.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing I'll give this movie credit for. They had references to real-life culture, pop culture things here. They'd have a jury of their peeps, which is a jury box full of peeps.
Yeah.
There's the peanut galleries made of circus peanuts, and yet it kind of worked.
Yeah.
They didn't go too far with the references.
No, this scene,
I wasn't
would
like
say,
a Mr.
is
Goodbar.
The best scene in the movie.
I was half expecting it to be like all like knockoff Shrek jokes, and it surprisingly wasn't.
Yeah, I thought if this scene was about them in Candy Country, or if this movie is about them in Candy Country, might not have been a terrible movie. Unfortunately, they leave Candy Country pretty quick. Jawbreaker sentences them to death.
Which is hilarious.
That's when they ask their names. Darthy
in
says,
"In a children's movie,
I mean,
they're going to get killed."
I mean, that's
for eating candy.
And it feels like the fat owl character is like, I guess it makes sense at this point. Yeah. I've eaten so much
candy. He's like, so much candy.
Look,
I deserve it.
I've escaped. It's the same way I feel today.
Finally, I can find sweet release from this fat prison I live in.
Yeah.
Someday, I'm going to be given a ticket for jaywalking in New York, and I'm going to be like, you know what? You got me. I've been doing this for 15 years. It was bound to catch up with me eventually.
Yeah,
I cannot fight this. Sends me to death. So Owsley is like, hey, you know what? I did the crime. I'm going to do the time, and the time is eternity because I'm going to be dead. Mm-hmm. But throw me in the ground. Don't even kill me first. But yeah. when they ask their names for the death certificates, Dorothy says Dorothy Gale. And they go, oh, Dorothy the hero, the witch killer. Send them on their way. This is not the only time this happens in the movie, which makes you think, why does Dorothy not just brandish her name at everybody?
She doesn't want to be like that kind of like – she doesn't want to be a celebrity who's like, give me the nice table
because
I'm Dorothy Gale.
But it's like if Tom Cruise wanted to get into a club and they're like, who are you? And he's like, nobody, nobody. You need a big fake mustache on. Like, just take advantage of your celebrity, dude.
Yeah.
Well, it's like wearing on their sleeve the fact that they're playing on the strength of the original story – by having Dorothy literally being like, remember that thing I did in that story you remember? That's why you should let me do whatever the fuck I want, basically.
Yeah, but also there's a lot of the – there's the moment in Wizard of Oz where they're at the gates of the Emerald City and he goes, oh, you got the ruby slippers? Well, that's a horse of a different color. Come on in. And then it's like, okay, let's do that four times in this movie.
Yeah.
Where people hear that she's Dorothy and they go, oh, well, that's different. Or they say something and the guardsman who's trying to keep him out of place goes, oh, well, that's different. Come on in. It's like...
Yeah, she does seem a little reluctant to play that shit. Like, where it's just like... I mean, it's just
Because she... And they don't address the fact that she clearly is upset about the fact that her fame comes from murdering
people. I think it's because she's from humble Kansas stock and she doesn't want to be a tall daffodil, you know?
Yeah.
Every time people bring that up, she imagines a poor witch melting to death.
You're Dorothy, the witch killer. And she just goes,
I didn't even know what would happen.
Blood on my hands. Green blood on my hands.
Come on, come on.
It won't clean. I can never be clean.
Green jelly on my hands. Little pig, let me in.
Oh, thank you. What a terrible song that was.
I remember buying the single when it was Green Jello.
Why?
Before they had to change their name, huh?
Because I was a fucking kid and I had no taste.
That was like there were a few videos when I was young on MTV where I was just like, I need to change the channel because this video was on because this is so terrible. And one of them was Green Jello.
I assume you're thinking, let me turn to VH1 because maybe there's something I can masturbate to here and there.
Yeah,
and MTV,
like,
there's going to be 3 minutes.
Like the vinyls, I touch myself.
Yeah, there you go. It's going to be 3 minutes before I can masturbate to anything on MTV unless that pig is kind of hot. The wolf's doing a lot of blowing. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
I just know the grind's going to be on later. That's all I know.
Wow.
If I'm lucky, it's spring break or the summer and they're doing one of those swimsuit grinds.
You know it.
So Marshmallow joins them on their quest to the Emerald City so that Marshmallow, he can find the missing general.
He has them, as you said, he has them dead to rights.
Yeah, he caught them. They are guilty, and yet they get to go free because they're white, and sure. Marshmallow is
also white,
it's a white law structure, you know. But anyway, he says, well, I have to go find General Candy Apple, my commanding officer. Turns out Candy Apple's been kidnapped by the Jester. I'll go with you to the Emerald City.
A little bit of dramatic irony for us, because we know that he is currently turned into a weird puppet.
Yeah, we'll just continue. Let's zoom through this, because we take it so long.
Yeah, we have gone way long.
They go through the dainty China country, where they pick up the China princess, who's rejecting potential suitors for her hand, one of whom is played by the guy who did the voice for Invader Zim. So that was fun for me because I'm a big
fan of that.
Tom Kenny's another suitor. They took the great cartoon voice actors and just kind of shoved them in one scene for a moment.
And there's a weird, great moment of shattered porcelain people, like faces still moving
just
around,
still singing on the ground.
Yeah,
where
good
it's like,
nightmare.
It's like a weird, like Gilliam film. Like again, another pretty good scene in the middle of the movie. Like the middle of the movie has a few good scenes.
I'll tell you why.
Because
they're going through these like crazy worlds that each have an interesting hook about them.
Yeah.
And then they're out of there. They go fast. After the dainty China country scene, they don't do that again. They build a boat out of a tree.
Well, they build a boat out of Patrick Stewart.
They go to the talking tree area where Dorothy took the apples in the first Wizard of Oz, and she wants wood to build a boat so they can go across down a river to get to the Emerald City. And the one tree volunteers, and it's
one tree
an old
hill.
It is on a hill, I guess. An old tree played by Patrick Stewart who's tired of sticking in one place and wants to see the world before he dies.
Tree, if you will.
They build a boat out of him, which is kind of frightening because it's just got that big chalk and tree head on the front. And later, soldiers are walking out of his mouth. But he's charming because it's Patrick Stewart.
But he's like, I mean, apparently he's still alive once they cut him down. I don't know what the other trees are worried about. But he's like, I'm old.
I'll tell you what they're worried about.
I've you know, make a boat out of me. Dan, I want to see the world.
They're all agoraphobic.
Okay.
And they want to stay in that little patch of ground.
Yeah, all right.
Now, his name is Tug.
Yeah, they
want to
have their little fucking Entmoot hanging out.
His name is Tug, and it's weird the tree is named Tug before he became a boat. That's a boat's name is Tug. He should have been called, like, Branchy or Treebeard.
Doesn't he change his name to Tank or Tonk or
later
something?
Later on. But now, they get to the Emerald City after falling over a waterfall. In the process,
China Girl
gets shattered into pieces.
But Marshmallow Man takes some fire and melts little bits of his marshmallow body.
Yep, in the most Rambo 3 moment of the movie.
Glues her back together. Number one, that's not very good glue.
Well, he sings a song about being in love with her.
Wait, have you ever tried it, dude?
Marshmallows are sticky, dude.
The reason they're called marshmallows.
Like because marshes are sticky. They're not desert mallows.
All right, fair enough.
It's very sticky. Maybe it's just a temporary measure until they can find some Oz crazy glue.
Yeah.
But all we know is gluing her pieces back together brings her back to life. They're in love despite the obvious differences. Mm-hmm. He serves the army.
The obvious size differences. We had a lot of discussion while we were watching this movie.
Not a lot. We had a little bit of discussion.
We drew a bunch of fucking diagrams.
About how these characters might indulge in the physical act of love.
I'm just saying.
I was going to say their main problem is that he's the soldier of a different nation. But
I'm saying that the main problem is he is literally six times larger than her. So even with his like squishy marshmallow penis, I'm not really sure how this union is going to. I don't. I mean, like,
wait,
am I alone here?
I thought there was a bone in it.
I mean, may they?
I thought that's why they called a boner.
Maybe they're not. Maybe it's not that kind of relationship. There's not a physical dimension like Carol Channing and her husband.
It's a companionate marriage.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe he's gay.
I don't know.
Maybe he blows feathers across her tummy and she fucking reaches climax, dude. I don't know.
What did that happen in?
40 Days and 40 Nights, the worst movie ever made.
I don't know. Nothing but trouble
across her tummy. Nothing But Trouble is the worst movie ever made.
No, dude.
Featuring this movie's Dan Aykroyd. Anyway,
Dan Aykroyd was in that movie?
He wrote it and played multiple parts.
But I remember a character with a penis for a nose that looked kind of like Dan
Aykroyd.
Penis
for annoyed. Which you have to avoid.
Avoid the penis annoyed. He fucks pizzas.
That's how it happens.
That's what he does. Like Tony Millionaire.
That's how you get more pizzas, though.
Wait a minute.
Like, that's the only
Tony
way.
Millionaire was in Big Sausage Pizza?
No.
Thing, though, like, if you want more pizzas, the only way is to fuck pizzas and then have little pizza babies.
Yeah, they're called pizza bagels. That's how you make pizza bagels.
In Back to the Future 2?
They take that dehydrated pizza and they put it in a sex machine. It's the orgasmatron from Sleeper, and it comes out as a full pizza. Anyway, Dorothy goes to the Emerald City. She confronts the Jester, who captures her. Whatever, I don't
who cares.
Even remember. Wiser the Owl overcomes his fear of flying to go help her. Everybody else goes to help her.
There's that great scene that we talked about where all of a sudden there's just a cut back to Patrick Stewart where there's a bird on his nose and he goes, "Sing me a song." Which is best part of the movie.
It sounds like Patrick Stewart was just kind of speaking to himself, and they decided to put it in the movie.
Like he still might.
There's a scene, now the animation in this movie is not as bad as Food Fight, but there is a scene now when Wowzer learns to fly, when Wowzy Owl learns to fly, there's a scene where it looks like...
It's pretty funny. It's a pretty funny scene.
It's a pretty funny scene, but also... It's so poor looking. It looks like he's in front of a bad green screen. And this is a CGI movie. There's no real elements here.
That's the thing. Every time they shoot Dorothy with the little China woman in her knapsack or fucking satchel, it just looks like bad forced perspective. It looks like Elijah Wood and Ian McKellen are 10 feet apart, but you're supposed to assume they're right next to each other.
But I got in terms of timing, in terms of editing a animated movie, in terms of figuring out visually how to sell a gag where he's flying is pretty funny because you get this huge owl and then they just hold the longest shot where he flies off into the distance over a waterfall and you slowly see him get smaller and smaller and it's just a static shot and it's a choice that I feel like
somebody made a choice you wouldn't
normally see that
there are a couple moments in this movie where that's not terrible.
Yeah.
But mostly it's just kind of a bland, boring movie. So let's skip through it. They confront the Jester, who, as far as I'm concerned, never really feels like an Oz character. He has his magic staff with like a magic orb on the top, and Dorothy's having trouble stopping him, except the Jester is really his worst enemy. Dorothy and the other heroes kind of stop dealing with him for a while during the climax as the Jester chases his magic orb across rooftops and down like pipes and things like that.
Yeah, well, they deal with the problem through the violence of attacking enemies with candy.
That's when Tug comes in. Tug the tree boat is now a tank, and he calls himself Tank. And he comes in with some soldiers from Candyland, and they're just shooting candy at flying monkeys, and it is relatively violent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there's a scene
if you consider monkeys being covered in candy.
But there's like the Scarecrow turns the Tin Man's head into a gun and is working at like an old machine gun with a crank. And there's a part where there's just a shot of the lion blasting people with I don't know what out of a candy cane. It gets weirdly shooting.
It's pretty
shooting.
Great because he's like kind of turning slowly in slow motion, firing these jelly beans, I guess, indiscriminately. And then it cuts to a shot of one monkey getting hit with multiple jelly beans. And there's no way, because he keeps aiming them in different directions, there's no way they're all hitting the same monkey.
Well, they're monkey-seeking jelly beans.
Oh.
There's a big tornado that the Jester summons to get rid of Dorothy, and he almost gets sucked into it.
A bunch of soldiers march out of the tree tank's mouth.
Yeah. Yep.
They've just been hiding in his gut.
And the soldiers, if the China soldiers get broken, they're still alive and still moving, and if the chocolate soldiers, if their heads come off, they're still walking around moving. These are hideous, you know, zombie automatons at this point.
Yeah, they should not be.
Dorothy, through the power of, I guess, being a good person.
They're like golems.
Yeah. They're chocolate golems, which are given out every year by Jewish parents to Jewish children on the holiday of Golemos. Or Yum Golem. Yum Golem is the day we celebrate how yummy golems are.
How much gelt do those cost?
A lot, because you've got to melt it down to make your golem.
Oh, okay.
Luckily, gelt is the worst tasting chocolate in the world.
Woo!
So you don't mind melting it down.
No.
So Dorothy uses the power of her being a good person, I guess, to break the staff, and she throws it in tornado. The Jester jumps into the tornado to get the staff.
Yeah, he dies or something.
And we see no more of his wicked, hilarious ways. Everybody who was a marionette, because he turns people into marionettes, turned back okay. Everything's fine. Dorothy goes home. She reveals that the fake appraiser who's buying everybody's houses for a song is, in fact, an imposter. The police arrest him. And over the end credits...
Yeah, he's been playing multiple roles, multiple identities, like a Dr. Henry Holmes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah,
like a hilarious Dr. Henry Holmes.
He's like a regular... I don't know. Can't even think of it.
Yeah.
Guy who pretends to be other guys.
Yeah, that guy.
You know, that guy?
You know,
who pretend to be guys. He's a regular catch me if you can.
Yeah.
Anyway, so uncatchable. what if the uncatchable team goes after catch me if you can?
Now that's a team up.
That's not a team up. It's like a Frankenstein versus Godzilla type thing. Yeah. They're fighting each other.
Wait a minute.
Wait,
that's the
on.
Scientist fights Godzilla.
Thank you.
That seems pretty easy.
Does he just create a giant undead monster?
He sews together the corpse of giants. The corpse of giants into
a
giant monster.
Of a bunch of Migos or whatever the fuck?
He sews together the corpses of all of the Giants football team.
To make one hideous football mass.
Yeah.
And Godzilla eats it, and it gives him brain damage or something.
That's terrible.
Anyway, and Godzilla has to deal with a lot of debilitating health effects later in life.
It's more sad than it is thrilling.
Yeah. So Dorothy, and over the end credits, Dorothy helps them rebuild the town as a song plays. The end of Legends of Oz. And I guess the door is open for them to use that rainbow machine to bring her back and have another... Legends
have another
of Oz.
Rainbow connection.
Yeah.
Don't bring up that movie I like more than this movie.
So, wow, this is the longest we've gone.
We barely talked about the movie.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
Well, we talked about a bunch of stupid stuff, Dan.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing to do. But let's...
Now what do we do?
Let's do final judgments. Wow.
Boom.
Classic sound effect. Haven't heard that one in a while.
What?
That's the house cat's brother, Nerdy House Cat.
Was this a good bad?
Excuse me, Rao?
I think you find that Rao to the power of Rao will equal the results you would desire.
Yeah, the Nerdy House Cat who like figures out the equation that makes lady house cats bras fall off. Yeah.
The tensile strength of that bra is not enough to withstand my, I don't know, laser beams.
I like how you said lady house cats bras, because a lady house cat would have multiple bras for her multiple rows of nipples. Yeah. Not attractive erotic by human standards, but to a cat,
to a cat,
very beautiful.
The, you know,
less than six breasts would seem strange.
Amazing.
So final judgments, so, everybody.
This is the part of the podcast where we
make... Are you okay, Stuart?
No.
I've never seen anyone choke to death on laughter before.
And Coors. Where we judge this
silver
movie.
Bullet to the head.
We judge this movie finally, which is to say, was this a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or a movie you kind of liked? I'm going to start. I'm going to say...
Wow, okay.
Here's the
just
thing.
Just assign yourself the majority opinion there, Chief Justice Dan.
The first and last third of this movie, bad, bad movie. The middle third of this movie... I kind of liked it. I kind of like there's a weird sort of magic to the middle part of this movie that the rest of the movie did not sustain. And that's what I have to say about that. Stu, what do you have to say?
I'm going to say this is a bad, bad movie with the caveat that it is not nearly as bad as I expected it to be watching the trailer.
I'm going
to
go like with Stuart on
this
that.
This is not a food fighter in Ooyah.
This was at best bland and boring.
I remember seeing the trailers in the theater and being like, what the fuck am I watching? Because I assumed it was like a D-grade Shrek ripoff, and it was not nearly that bad.
Well, and this was also like put out by like Sunshine Media or something, something that sounds like a made up shell corporation.
Summertime Entertainment.
All right, yeah.
Some kind of Kelsey Grammer owned business.
This is just Summertime Entertainment.
And it's like it was a US India co-production. Like it's a movie that you would think would be like crazy bonkers bad, and it's just like meh. And like, even I would say like the best I can say about it is like, as a huge Wizard of Oz fan, I never felt like this is
you didn't think that anyone was urinating on Frank L. Baum's grave.
It didn't feel like a desecration. It just kind of felt unnecessary.
Sure. Yeah, so it's great. So we do have a couple of sponsors.
Get the fuck out of here.
For tonight's show.
I love them.
It's insane. People want to support the Flophouse.
Okay, cool. Let's hear about
them. I think that's wonderful.
Let's support them.
Let's support them and find out who they are and what products we can buy.
And first, the Flophouse is brought to you in part by the kind support of Audible.com. The internet's leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment.
What does that include, Dan? Does that mean audiobooks?
That means audiobooks.
Does that mean podcasts?
I'm not sure. It definitely means audiobooks.
Audiobooks.
Well, thanks, Dan.
That's the audiobooks of choice from the Flophouse Wives Book Club.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. We are our lovely wives. Have a book club, which is a thing that they do when we're being assholes in this,
doing this
apartment, doing this, and they don't want to be around.
My
us.
Wife uses Audible,
yeah,
and she really likes the fact that if she doesn't like a book, she can return it. There's a lot of really great things about Audible.
Excellent.
Well, and Audible is offering Flophouse listeners a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audiblepodcast.com/flop and get a free audiobook of your choice now. At audiblepodcast.com/flop. But we're also sponsored this week by Squarespace, the all-in-one website platform that makes building your own website simple and easy. If you need a website...
And you do.
Why not make it simple and easy?
Yeah.
Let's face it. You need a website.
Why make it difficult and hard?
No.
I mean, those words mean the same thing, but...
but with different intonations.
Make it simple
you
and
never
easy.
You never say you're totally difficult for a girl.
Yeah,
sure.
I don't know what that means.
You never say you're making me so difficult.
Yep.
Okay. Use the other word.
That seems okay. I'm not sure what Squarespace thinks of that being in the middle of the ad, but...
Look, what we're saying is Squarespace takes something that could be really hard.
Yeah.
And makes it really easy.
Makes it easy.
Mm-hmm. They've been a big supporter of the Flophouse podcast.
They have been.
They certainly have been. Squarespace has beautiful templates, integration with Google Apps.
Oh, those templates are making me difficult.
And Getty Images. And it has responsive design, which means, you know, it doesn't matter. You're looking at it on your your laptop. You're looking at your phone. You're looking at it on your
iPad.
Yeah. Looks great no matter where you're looking at these websites. For a free trial.
You don't have to set up a whole new website for every medium, every device.
No, that would be foolish.
Yeah.
Use Squarespace instead. For a free trial and 10% off your first order, go to squarespace.com. Enter the code FLOP. Squarespace, start here, go anywhere.
That's FLOP.
My advice, go to audible.com. Mm-hmm. Use the code to get a book. Start up your account there. Listen to it while you're setting up your website through Squarespace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your Flophouse podcast fan page.
Write about the book on your new webpage.
There is a dearth of Flophouse fan pages. There's, of course, the Flop Wiki, which is great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where's and the Flophouse recommends page.
But I go to the Boomist Flophouse ring.
Yeah.
There's nothing there.
Yeah.
Do people even have web rings anymore?
Are there even...
What's a web ring?
Was just a bunch of linked sites, and you could click between them.
Is there even any deviant art about the Flophouse?
That is a dangerous door to open, and I'd rather we not go through it. A Flophouse fan site is one thing. We don't need more pictures of us and the house cat having sex with each other.
I'm Jesse Thorne.
I'm Jordan Morris.
The federal government has millions of dollars in programs and opportunities that you need to seize today.
You're a taxpayer, right? Well, then you've got it coming.
Thanks to Uncle Sam, you can get grant programs for veterans.
Postage stamps that'll ensure your mail gets there in a timely fashion.
Fruit for you and your family.
Child care for your children that turns them into super soldiers.
Get $1 million to open your own lake.
Useful power tools that are easy on your soft, delicate hands.
Your own personal radioactive brick.
More sexual attention from everyone at the used bookstore.
Greyhound tickets.
Soft, gentle kisses from TV's John Goodman.
A real narwhal.
Athletic socks filled with stew.
A valuable pamphlet on millet.
Your father's approval.
Don't wait. Right now.
For all of this and more, drop us a line.
Jordan Jesse Go, 123 iTunes Street, or wherever you download podcasts.
Okay, Dan, what's next?
So, I have a few.
Do you want to use this chance to talk about some of our other great podcasts on our Maximum Fun Network?
That actually would be a good thing to do at this point. Thank you to our network, Maximum Fun. You can go visit them at MaximumFun.org.
Yep.
We've got a lot of great podcasts on the same Maximum Fun network.
Such as?
Jordan Jesse Go. Perfect. You've got Judge John Hodgman. You've got
Judge John Hodgman, our nemesis podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen to it, but be mad when you listen to it.
The mm-hmm. Adventure Zone.
Shake your fist.
My brother and me. Sawbones.
Get a room, my brother and me in the Flophouse.
You got your Wham Bam Pow, your Lady to Lady.
Pop Rocket, right?
Yeah, a lot of great
you
podcasts.
You say Adventure Zone?
I did.
Oh.
Bunker Buddies.
Did you mm-hmm. say Bunker Buddies?
No, Stuart did.
I just said it.
Yeah. Did you say my brother and me? What about Sawbones? Did you mention that?
Get a room, my brother and me in the Flophouse.
Okay, but the point
literally.
Is, go to MaximumFun.org, check out a lot of great shows on our network, and enjoy them, because that's what they're for. They're for you to
yep,
enjoy.
I guess, information purposes.
No. No. If you want to use them for information purposes, you will be sorely disappointed.
A lot of them have more information than this podcast.
Well, sure.
Like Sawbones has information on it.
Yeah, no, that's true. There's actual medical information to be had there. I mean,
I fired my doctor.
No, that
I just listened to Sawbones.
I would not do that. I would not do that.
I said
I don't recommend that.
I said, physician, fired him out heal of the thy cannon. Fucking self, and I tossed a match at him.
Wow.
Sure.
Yeah.
And he walked away as he exploded. Why did he explode? I don't know.
I don't know. He's just that kind of doctor.
He was drinking a lot of butane. He was a bad doctor. He was a bad doctor who thought it was good to drink butane.
Everyone I deal with is the bad version of themselves. Bad doctors, bad teachers, bad Santas.
Sure.
Bad You're, judges.
You sound like
Kate Walsh.
I don't know, like NBC's Saturday Night Lineup.
So anyway, now is the point.
And keep trying to order good pizza, but you keep getting bad Andy.
What about
Domino's?
Good
What's going on with that?
What about Good Burger?
No, I mean that's great.
I have Bad Burger.
Oh, yeah. That's terrible.
You know that show Good Times? I turn it on and Bad Times plays. You ever have the candy Good and Plenty? Bad and Plenty.
Sounds like you've got a terrible life, Elliot.
You ever heard of seeing the movie It's a Wonderful Life? I'm It's a Terrible Life.
Worried about you.
Anyway. You know that old British comedy group, The Goodies? The Baddies.
You know your favorite movie, Dan? Good Luck Chuck. Can you guess what Elliot's version is?
No, I can't.
It's called Bad Luck Chuck.
It's called Bad Luck Chuck.
It's called Bad Luck Charlie. Nobody wants to be his friend and call him Chuck.
Yeah. So.
Ironically, Bad Dad Soccer Dad. Good Dad Tennis Dad.
You know your second favorite movie, The Long Kiss Goodnight.
Long Kiss Bad Night, Dan.
That's my second favorite movie. Is The Long Kiss.
You know,
Goodnight.
You know the Elton John song you hear the most? Bad Bye Yellow Brick Road.
Right. Thanks, Bizarro hosts.
Neil Simon's The Goodbye Girl. You bet. You guessed it. The Bad Boy Boy. Even the bye part was changed. That's how bad it is.
Bad Boy Bye.
All right. Well, thanks. But now...
Boris Badenov? More like Boris Gudenov, who was a real person.
Okay. Time to move on.
There's an opera based on him.
To letters from listeners like you, the person who's listening to this podcast right now. If you had written this letter... It could have been your letter that I'm reading right now.
That's the tautest tautology I've ever felt.
unless you are the guy or girl who wrote this letter that I'm about to read, in which case, cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Have no fear, because your letter will be read on the air tonight. Or maybe it won't. I don't know, because I don't know you, and Dan picks the letters. I've got no idea, and I haven't seen them, but now we're going to read them and hear them and be them. We'll be the letters. We'll act them out on our new show, the Flophouse Letter Act Out Show, Sundays at 10 o'clock on TNT.
TNT knows
drama.
That song was almost long enough for Stuart to go to the fridge and get a Modelo.
This is your third beer? Fourth beer?
This counts as one.
So anyway, this letter goes a little something like this. I started listening to you earlier this year from episode one. I'm still only part of the way to being current. I must say, I feel like a bit of an underachiever, as it's taken me months to reach episode 124, Stolen, starring Nicolas Cage.
Hey, it took us years to get there.
While earlier letter writers have reported blowing through your whole back catalog in a week or less. Nonetheless, I've been enjoying listening to the podcast fast-forward itself through time, compressed like a time-lapse movie. Stuart gets married. Elliot writes for Marvel. Dan finds a job and secures his position as Purvisoid number one. And of course, while I was still traumatized by Ding Dong Gate, the back catalog allowed me to fly through all five stages of grief in record time. Now that I've gone too far in attempting to prove my bona fides, I would like to ask a question. I was thinking.
Don't even do it, Stuart.
I was thinking recently about the concept of the setup. When movies go out of their way.
The setup?
When movies go out of their way to show you something early on so that later when the hero uses it, it doesn't seem like it just came out of nowhere. For example, sometimes a movie has to make sure to show someone swimming, so that later the audience doesn't react in disbelief when the fittest teenager on Earth is able to swim 20 feet. My question for you is this. What do you think are the examples of some really great payoffs? They could be great because of how subtle or unexpected the setup is, or perhaps because of how insane the payoff is. Anyway, thanks for the great podcast. Perhaps one day our timelines will once again be aligned. Scott, last name withheld. I'm going to say that one thing that springs to mind immediately is that I feel like all of Edgar Wright's movies are...
Man, I wish I could watch his movies. You know whose movies I've been seeing? Edgar Wrong.
Boy. No, but I feel like, all of his movies... work really well as comedies because, like, the first half of them are funny on their own terms.
Uh-huh.
And then...
Not on someone else's terms.
No, but, like it's not just,
not
like...
Not on Jacques Tati's terms.
It's not like you're, like, just, like bored, like, okay, this is setting something up. But, like,
no, it's funny in the beginning,
you find
too.
It as funny, and then, like, the second half of his movie...
Things
is,
pay off.
Yeah, a series of payoffs that are so elegantly, like, put together that you didn't realize that they were going to be paid off. And you're like, okay... Great, like everything that happened in the first half meant something. Mm-hmm. And that's like the kind of, I think that's the first thing that comes to my mind.
Yeah, I mean, me too. What about you, Elliot? Are you well-versed in?
Actually, a movie I'm going to mention is one that is a little, I feel like the Coen brothers do a similarly very good job of paying things off later they've set up. But one movie that I love, it might be my favorite of their movies, although it is not, I would not say it's the best of their movies, but in The Man Who Wasn't There, there's a lot of offhand references to things that are paid off later in ways that don't always make sense and don't always even move the plot forward, but are really funny. Like James Gandolfini's wife believes that something involving aliens took him away. And so later when Billy Bob Thornton is in jail and walks out, just looks at a flying saucer in the air, nods at it, and then walks back into this jail. Like, it's totally goofy and is a non sequitur in a lot of ways, but it's a payoff to this thing. Like, I feel like in that movie, there's a lot of loose strands that don't necessarily get tied together, but they reappear in different forms than they started, and it feels like a whole, even though plot-wise, it's not like that was a big plot payoff or anything.
Yeah, I don't know if it's cheating. But to kind of go along with the same lines of Edgar Wright, but I feel like Cabin in the Woods is a movie that does a lot of that, where they introduce things. I don't know if it totally fits the parameters of the question either, but I feel like things are introduced early on that end up showing up later on that end up working.
Oh, no, definitely. I mean, all the stuff about the merman, and that comes up later. Yeah, like it seems like a throwaway joke, but then it becomes a real thing later on.
Yeah, and I think that might be the secret to doing these things that pay off, is like it can't be obvious. Like
the more obvious the setup, the less satisfying the payoff.
Right.
Much like, I mean, there's the old Chekhov thing about like if there's a gun on the mantle in Act One, it has to go off in Act Three. But like if the camera stops on that gun for a while, you know it's going to go off.
Right.
So it's not a good payoff. Like, it has to be something that is tossed off in Act 1, but then in Act 3 you're like, whoa, that was supposed to be this thing, which is what Edgar Wright does so well.
I think that we're talking about a lot of movies that are similar tonally, but it just occurs to me that, like, something like Guardians of the Galaxy, like, one thing that I like about, like, the climax of that movie is it's not necessarily a setup, but, like, the fact that the climax of that movie hinges on like Star-Lord suddenly just like dancing and singing in the context of like a big Marvel movie. That's kind of an unexpected thing that happens,
but it ties into the character trait that we've seen in
a satisfying way.
Or it could even be something as simple as like in Groundhog Day, the radio starting at the same place each morning. So on the last day, when it starts at a slightly different point in the song, it is enough to tip you off that something is different. And so it's like the beginning of the payoff of, you know, the conclusion of the film. Like it's not a setup in the terms of like, this happened in the first act, now this is going to happen in the third act. But it's something that's seeded a number of times and then bears fruit multiple times.
Similar to the best movie of all time, Big Trouble in Little China, where Jack Burton, early on in the movie, uses the phrase, it's all in the reflexes, and then later on, totally murders Lo Pan, spoiler alert, and says the same iconic line, all of the reflexes.
Or I'd say in my candidate for best movie ever, Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, Martin Balsam sneezing and Walter Matthau saying Gesundheit, and then at the end, that paying off in a hilarious, hilarious take and catch him up. But that's probably
the most hottest of takes.
But when it first happens, you're not like, that's what's going to trip him up later. But as soon as he sneezes, when Walter Matthau's out of the room, you're like, uh-oh.
Yeah, you're like a Stewart sound effect. You're like, uh-oh.
And I'll tell you, that movie also has a good example of a red herring setup, which is they know there's a police officer on the train. And they keep undercover, and they, for some reason, Walter Matthau gets it in his head that it must be a police woman. And so, later on, it's revealed who the police officer is. It's not a woman.
He's just got long hair because it's the 70s.
He's almost totally ineffective, but he gets shot and he's lying face down, and Walter Matthau sees him and just goes, don't worry, miss. We'll get an ambulance here. And it's like this joke that's been set up way, way back.
And so dumb. Like, it's not a great joke, but
it's just what you need in that moment when you just see Robert Shaw electrocute himself. Yeah. Spoiler alert. you mm-hmm. just had that movie ruined for you. But still go see it.
I mean, it's not ruined. It's still a great movie. Yeah, it's not like...
it's a nonstop thrill ride.
It's not like what Michael Bay's been doing to people's childhoods from what I hear on the internet.
So this next letter is titled, Why Dan Sighs?
Yeah, hi, why is that?
Hi, Floppos.
I don't like that name.
No, don't. Not a fan.
I figured it out.
It makes it sound like we're, I don't know, Greek or something.
I know why. Wow,
that's your problem with it? Floppos. I thought it sounded like we're clowns, but, you know.
I figured it out. I know why Dan sighs. It's because Dan hopes for the best. Dan is brimming with optimism.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe this will be the episode when I can get through a whole thought uninterrupted. This is nope. finally going to be a movie I kind of like. Today is going to be a good pronunciation day. And then reality sets in and wallops Dan with a fistful of sad, forcing a sigh from deep within him. I came to this realization when I listened to episode 155, followed by episode 50. I skip around. They both begin with Dan, excited by his persistence in podcasting, 50, and life, 155, hoping for presents from his BPFs, Best Peaches Forever, and he's greeted both times and 3 years apart with their word-for-word same joke and no gifts. I've attached the audio cut from 51st and 155 seconds, so you can see what I mean. I don't.
50
I can't.
Shades of Dan.
Audio. So sigh on, you beautiful starry-eyed podcaster. And never let reality rip away that wonderful optimism of yours.
Optimism?
Michael, middle name withheld, Cadle.
Now, I would mention that Dan never goes into the movie saying, hey, this is one we might kind of like, because if that's a possibility, we don't get to watch it. Dan, like the cruel mistress
cruel
he is.
Taskmaster.
Cruel. Yeah.
Taxmaster.
Cruel taxmaster.
I'm a cruel taxmaster.
I'm a skeleton face that does your taxes.
Skeleton face.
So what I love is watching Dan that... read letters, occasionally spitting into his Jonathan Frakes beard.
Shut up.
I was going to say, now I imagine the Crypt Keeper is going to write in and say he does not appreciate us making fun of his voice and putting on skeleton face and doing these offensive ghoul routines.
Sure. What I like is that you mispronounced appreciate, and neither of us fucked with you.
Yeah, I appreciate that, too.
Whereas I love this letter because of the truth that it carries. I am optimistic.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
the problem.
Yeah, Optimistic Prime. That's your name.
That's the blob.
I'm like fucking Charlie Brown with the football.
You like fucking Charlie Brown?
With a football?
This is... Save it for your DeviantArt page, dude.
Sure. All right.
How many more letters we got?
We got one more. And it goes like
this.
Let's
crack this one out. Let's crack some cans.
Dan...
light the tires and kick the fires.
It's titled, Dan, read this letter.
Buy some tires. Light them on fire.
Oh God. It's titled, Dan, read this letter.
Scourge the Shire.
No.
It's titled...
Let's scour the Shire.
Dan,
this is a different thing.
Read this letter. It has a butt in it. Dear Peaches.
Dan, these letters really got to the heart of you. You're an optimist who loves butts.
Quite some time listener, first time writer. A friend of mine recommended you in the Flophouse to me when I was still listening to other bad movie podcasts. I was quickly converted and finished your entire back catalog. You can add me to the large number of people who've already written in and said you helped them get through a difficult time.
Well, I'm glad we could do that.
Last year was not pleasant.
And just to say, honestly... It means a lot to us when people say that, and we hope that we've... Yeah. This is not what we're setting out to do. In fact, we're setting out to hurt people. But mm-hmm. if we could help anyone, then that just by being goofy, then it's very touched. Very touching to us that we've been able to do that.
You might think about registering the podcast as an officially recognized antidepressant and start a medical revolution. We can't keep the wondrous reviving powers of the Flophouse a secret forever. But I also have a question for all three of you. Obviously, the listeners know all about your taste in movies, mm-hmm. and we've heard of your favorite comics, historical figures, beers, and dinosaurs. Elliot wow. is totally right. You gotta pronounce this for me.
Deinonychus.
Deinonychus all the way.
Dionysus?
No, Dionysus is not my favorite Greek god by far.
But there have only been...
Is Dionysus, that's the Greek name. Not the Roman name is Bacchus, right? Not the other way around? Yeah. I could be wrong.
But there have only been a few hints about your respective tastes in music. Elliot seems to know a lot about metal, while Dan is more of an indie listener.
Stuart knows more about metal than me.
I don't know. Does Invisible Maniac have an original soundtrack?
It does.
It's also, yeah.
So my question...
Big
what,
trouble. No. An Invisible Maniac.
My question...
I wish that was the theme song for every movie.
Big trouble.
Big trouble. In terms of endearment. Big Trouble in Mary Poppins.
In Ordinary People.
The Imitation Game.
Run, run into the mystic Kramer versus Kramer.
So
I mean, these are all appropriate.
So my question, what is your favorite style of music?
What's a movie without Big Trouble?
Jesus Christ. Let me just get through the end of this fucking
Nothing
thing.
But trouble.
Because we are running long.
This is a very long episode.
So just let me finish the email. Hurry up, my question, what is your favorite style of music or your favorite artists or favorite albums? I'd be much obliged if you could give me an answer, maybe even on air. I'm sure Flop fans would like to know as well. And P.S., I promised a butt. This is from Christian, last name withheld. P.S., I promised a butt, mainly to increase my chances of Dan reading this. But I don't want to disappoint Pervazoid number one, so there you go. And there's an ashy butt.
So it's made out of what?
Made out of punctuations. You got
how is it?
You got a Y.
Is that how it's pronounced? Ashy?
Ashy? I don't
Ashy?
It's very ashy.
You know. As punctuation based butts go, it's not a bad one.
Yeah, it's got a Leisure Suit Larry feel to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a Tiffany Shepa's pumpkin butt, but it's okay.
It's been a long time since that came up.
So the question, though,
Winky
was,
emoticon.
What music do we like? You know, our top bands or top albums?
Yeah, yours is Talking Heads or something, right?
Shut the fuck up.
Wait, but
let me do my thing, and why don't you do your thing?
I'll go real quick.
You jackass.
How about I go real quick first to detensify the situation? I am a big fan of metal. I used to listen to a lot of punk when I was younger, but I haven't listened to so much of that lately. But lately, because I've been putting it on while I feed my son lunch or breakfast or what have you, or dinner. Mm-hmm. I've been listening to a lot of classical music.
And like Raffi?
No. And rediscovering my love of, you know, Tchaikovsky and so forth. But I'll say my favorite album is still Unleashed in the East, the kind of live Judas Priest album, which much of it was done in the studio after the fact, including, I think, all of the vocals. But it's a really good album if you want to hear faster, harder versions of a lot of Judas Priest's older songs.
I'll say if you want to boil me down to a genre, I like
big butts.
And I cannot lie.
You're under
I like
in
all
butt court.
I like all butts, and I cannot lie. I like new wave, like punk new wave. My favorite like five bands, if I had to run them down, would probably be the Beatles, Talking Heads, the Clash, the Replacements, and Nico Case. Those are my favorites. Stu, what do you got?
I'm a big metalhead. I listen to a lot
like
of
the robot turtle of the same name.
Yep. We both, me and Metalhead the Turtle, both like Iron Maiden, King Diamond, like mid-range Carcass, 90s death metal. So
you're making these names up. Yep. By the way,
Napalm Death.
You just went to see Napalm Death recently.
Yeah,
right?
I saw Napalm Death recently. They're still great. Yeah, I don't know.
Still out there napalming people.
All of it. All of them. Yeah, I mean, if you get napalmed, do you expect to be dead afterwards? All that kind
of
stuff.
I think a lot of, and also I should mention also something that gets left out a lot of time when people think about me, is that I'm a big classic country fan, particularly Loretta Lynn is my favorite of all time.
Okay.
So I think if Loretta Lynn and Rob Halford ever made an album together, I am online for that album.
Sure.
I'm waiting online
Wanda Jackson and Glenn Danzig.
So I hope that
if
that
Tammy Wynette and basically all Metallica put something together.
Wow!
If they could work with like the London Symphony, not really.
I feel like we've got like this like weird like also like Venn diagram though of the Flophouse, in that like you and I, Elliot, share like certain like punk and new wave stuff, and Stuart, you and Elliot share like metal stuff together.
Sure, yeah.
No one shares my love of Duke Ellington.
Stuart, you and I share what? Like, we
a
both,
love of butts?
Who's Johnny by Aldebarge?
Yeah, but I think we both. I mean, we certainly love that.
Man in Motion.
Yeah.
Like cheesy 80s stuff.
Oh, clearly.
Yeah, your love of Tone Loc is what connects you.
So, I hope that answers your question. But now, the final and saddest
what's the last
segment
thing we do?
On
the final segment. My dad's favorite driving song.
Really?
For years when I was a kid, he had Europe's album that had Final Countdown on it. He would play just that one song from the album when we were going on like a driving trip somewhere.
Yeah, what else is on that album?
I don't know. He would stop it, rewind the tape, and then take the tape out.
My dad would always play a shitload of Bob Seger, and my mom would play the Rocky Horror Picture Show Show soundtrack until I started singing along to it, and then she's like, "My son probably shouldn't be singing this."
See, my parents just play a lot of Billy Joel, a lot of Beatles, and a lot of Billy Joel.
Yeah,
but I grew up in the tri-state area, so what are you gonna do?
This is the segment where we recommend movies that we actually liked. Unlike whatever the fuck we watched tonight.
It was called Dorothy's
Rise
Legends
of Dorothy,
of...
Oz, It's a Legend.
It's called Dr. Oz, Dorothy's Revenge.
The original Kings of Oz, Dorothy style.
Stu, what do you want to recommend?
Dorothy Does Oz.
I'm going to recommend a movie that is a remake of a movie that Dan recommended a while ago. I don't remember. I'm going to recommend the movie Sorcerer, directed by William Friedkin. That's a remake of the French movie Wages of Fear.
Correct.
So what Dan said applies to Sorcerer.
Only way more because it's in color.
Yeah. It's about...
Plus a Tangerine Dream soundtrack.
It's about four guys who are desperate men who...
need to lose their virginity in Tijuana.
But their penises will explode.
it's pretty great. They all end up in a South American country that I don't remember, and they're tasked with, they volunteer for a mission driving trucks through the jungle, transporting, dynamite, nitroglycerin. And it's super tense and super great. And there's a couple moments where there's like, you're just watching a truck trying to go over this shitty, shoddy wooden bridge, and I'm watching this in the theater, and I'm like, no modern movie would do this. Like, no modern movie, the climax would be watching a truck try to make it over a bridge. And in a way, it was great because it was still super fucking tense. So, Sorcerer, William Friedkin with Roy Schneider. It's Roy Schneider.
Rob Schneider's dad.
Roy Schneider.
Yeah.
And
the elder Bigelow, Schneider.
I think Francisco Rival, who's from one of my favorite directors in the universe, Stuart Gordon's movie, Dagon.
Oh.
Who gets his skin totally ripped off in that movie.
But not
final,
Sorcerer.
Final appearance. No, he doesn't get his skin ripped off in Sorcerer. But go watch Dagon, too, because he gets his skin ripped off.
I want to recommend a movie that I'm kind of surprised I'm recommending.
It's called Legends of Oz, Dorothy's Return.
No, as members of the Writers Guild, we get a lot of screeners, and I'm like, whatever. This movie I want to see, this movie I don't actually want to see. Like,
check out Braggs McGee over
no,
here.
No, I'm just saying,
Billy,
like,
Braggs.
I'm just saying that, like, we have the opportunity to watch movies.
Yeah,
that,
check out Bradley Cooper.
Oh, God.
Oh, damn. Man.
Like, we wouldn't necessarily watch these movies, like, but recently I watched Wild, the Reese Witherspoon movie.
Wild
about
Heart?
No, not
Laura, with Reese Witherspoon.
Not the Laura Dern movie, David Lynch. Although Laura Dern actually is in Wild, too.
Weird.
But, I'm not necessarily, like, usually a fan of, like, kind of, like, the Vision Quest school of movies. Like,
what about Vision Quest?
I've never seen it.
What about Dreamscape?
But like these movies where like there's been something that happened in someone's life and they're gonna fix it by going on like a big trip. Your Eats, Prays, Loves, or your Into the Wilds is. But there's something about Wild that
I think those are probably pretty different movies.
but they're like the
certainly the endings are different.
They are different movies.
They both involve eating.
They're different movies, but they're similar in that like there's some sort of like personal upheaval that the main character feels like they're going to solve by going on like a trip.
On a journey, on a quest.
Yeah.
True.
And
on a vision quest, if you will.
Like a Lord of the Rings.
And Wild somehow I feel like sidesteps a lot of those problems by like not insisting on it that much. Like it's a very low key movie. Like
low key is in it.
No kidding.
It's staggering how much talk there is
in it.
How much talk there is when I recommend a movie versus either of you two. But no, like, it's...
What about Wotan?
Oh, boy, God.
No, but I agree, Dan. Like, I saw Wild also, and I thought it avoided a lot of pitfalls of that type of movie, partly because...
Like, it just doesn't make... It does not insist upon itself. Like, it's just, like, this woman goes on this trip, and, like, there are minor epiphanies, and, you know, like, you just live with her on it, and it's not a big deal.
She has truly reached rock bottom in her life in a way that justifies a dramatic break in the person she was and the person she will be. But also, yeah, it's not a movie that is trying to get you to wish you were on the trip with that person.
Right.
Which a lot of those are, where you are supposed to be living vicariously through this person's experiences. This is you're with this person on their trip, but you're never supposed to be like, oh, if only I could be there doing that.
Right. And you're also like, you're sympathetic with her because, like, you're a human being who has empathy for other human beings, but you're not, but the movie does not insist that you're, like, supposed to, like, believe in this woman as, like, some sort of paragon of anything.
She's not,
like,
a saint.
Yeah, you're like, she's a fucked up lady who, like, is doing this thing to, like, help herself, and it's interesting to watch that happen.
And you know? And what she goes through is truly arduous.
And not to undercut your recommendation, but why do you think that the majority of, like, critical reception kind of pass it by? Like, why do you think?
I don't know.
It got very good reviews.
It got good reviews. I just think that, like, for whatever reason, the promotion, like, the advertising for it just failed it. Like, and I think...
I honestly don't remember seeing any ads for it.
Yeah, I did not see it. Nick Hornby did the adaptation for it.
Yeah, he wrote the script.
And I think that...
Which is why Hugh Grant is in it.
Yeah. But I think that probably helped it, though. Because, like, I feel like it has a certain, like, low-key, like, charm and wit that a lot of these types of movies don't have. So
there's not
even if you think it's not the kind of movie for you, I think that you might enjoy Wild.
Yeah, it's worth watching. I'm going to recommend a different movie about people on the run from their past and on an arduous quest. And that's a movie that is a pretty goofy movie, but not as goofy.
Is it the Goofy Movie?
It's called The Goofy Movie. A Goofy Movie, which is the movie Logan's Run. Now, when I was a kid, I saw Logan's Run, and I think I saw...
That's Dave Foley's character in News Radio's favorite movie.
Yeah, right? Well, it's not my favorite movie, but when I was a kid, I saw it, and I must have seen, like, an edited-for-TV version of it and thought that that was it. And I watched it again recently, and it's still...
like, Jimmy Agutter is totally new ball.
Well, that's part of it, but... and it's way more appropriate for me to like that than it was in Walkabout when she was 16, but... There's something about it it is very goofy. It's a goofy movie, mainly because of the 70s fashions. But at the same time...
isn't the goofy movie.
But at the same time, there's a lot of stuff in it that is genuinely troubling, and there are a lot of scenes in it that as an adult I found much more effective and disturbing than when I was a kid.
Yeah, because you're over 30 now.
Well, maybe that's part of it. But there's silly stuff in it, but like there's the scene...
Like silly stuff, but is there goofy stuff in
it? But there's something... I found it interesting to watch it as like... this weird last gasp of a certain type of science fiction movie, because the special effects in it are not very good.
Yeah.
But this is 1 year before Star Wars came out. And so it's like watching this movie and putting myself in the mindset of someone who this is as good as science fiction is going to get as far as I'm concerned as a science fiction fan in 1976. It's a silly movie, but it's trying to deal with some kind of ideas about society. There's some scenes in it that are genuinely either disturbing or frightening or exciting, but it still looks kind of crappy. And not knowing that just around the corner is this movie that is not in any way disturbing, it's just a great adventure movie, but looks a lot better. But looking at it through the lens of science fiction of 1976, I actually enjoyed it a lot. There's a lot of stuff in it that goes on too long. There's stuff in it that's silly, that doesn't make sense. The acting in it is not the best. Like, there's a lot of things.
It's kind of like Westworld.
Kind of. I mean, which is a movie I love. But, like, it's a movie that is very much of its time, but is, I found really enjoyable to watch.
No, I agree in that, like, I feel like there's something really charming about watching a science fiction movie that is as much about the time it was made in as the time it purports to be about.
Well, like, this is...
Yeah, I mean, I feel that way when I read, like, older science fiction, too.
Yeah, I read a lot of, like... 50s and 60s science fiction.
Like, and Star's like, My Destination and stuff.
Exactly. And it's like the, Bester stuff especially. And it's like about the things that were going on then. So like Logan's Run as a movie made by an aging studio executives about their fears that the world is too obsessed with youth is an interesting thing. Like, I kept thinking, like, all the stars are young in this, but the people who made the movie were not young, I assume. They're all, like, old pros. And, like, what was it like to make this movie about a world where everybody is under 30 and no one can live longer than that? Like, people were worried that they were getting – maybe that this youth culture was going to drive them out. Like, there's a lot of
– It's like that Just in Time movie we watched.
Not exactly.
Hamburger, but, steak, et cetera.
Yeah. But, like, once worried about how those Beetle boots are going to, like, ruin everyone's lives.
And all the mini skirts. Yeah. Once you can get past the truly horrendous special effects in the explosion scenes where they're literally just – optical processed explosion fireworks on top of the shots, then there's a lot of neat stuff in it. But yeah, it's a silly movie. You got to watch it half laughing. You know, it's got a rainbow on the poster.
Yeah, one foot on the beach, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, and keep reaching for the stars.
So somehow this has become the longest episode ever.
Well, you know, when you're
if you made it this far, you get a merit badge.
You had gold, like.
The Legend of Oz continues to return.
The Legend of Curly's Gold.
They're not all going to be like this.
Baby,
people.
The last Oz dinosaur. yeah, why? How did it get so long,
Dan? I don't know. Magic?
That's probably it, yeah.
Oz magic?
The Gathering.
Wow. Somebody tapped a shitload of land cards.
Some fan tapped a bunch of forest mana, and suddenly we found the power to do a long episode.
So we should sign off. But for the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
Hey, I've been Stuart Wellington.
The next episode, Elliot Kalin promises, will be shorter.
Good night, everyone.
Slammin' Salmon.
Has anyone ever seen that movie? Like, I mean, in the history of the world.
Okay.
Did that...
Maybe Elliot.
That, no. Slammin' Salmon. Did that make... Any dollars was there.
You're a big... Yeah, people... there's some people who really like that.
I'm not saying that Broken Lizard hasn't done some fine work. I'm saying, has anyone seen The Slammin' Salmon?
Somebody has seen it. I'm sure the editor, when he was working on it, saw it.
Sure.
Whoever did the color correction.
No, they had to pluck his eyes out first.
Like, Jay Chandrasekhar has become a very great television comedy director. I'm not casting aspersion. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I don't believe that anyone has seen Slam.
I was talking to a woman who
seems
was...
Like a weird, this is a weird conspiracy for you to try to unlock.
Weird place for me to, like, dig in, you think? Like, a weird place for me to plant my flag?
Yeah, this is your hill to die on.
Yeah.
Where an armies of Broken Lizard devotees... come and try and take the hill from you.
Again, I was saying, like, talented guys, not saying anything against
I was
them.
Talking to a woman who was an extra on Beer Fest.
Uh-huh.
And she was complaining that she didn't know what was worse, either the constant pressure to have her take her top off in the scenes, or the fact that she had to sit around drinking lukewarm, non-alcoholic beer.
Wait, so what was the problem?
Salmon wasn't slamming.
If those things were not the problem, wait, saying those were the problem?
Those were the problem.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Sorry.
And she was complaining about how the slamming salmon doesn't exist and nobody's ever seen it. Yeah, it's weird, right?
What is the slamming salmon?
It's a salmon that's slamming. What's not to understand about that?
Is it like...
I mean, it's in the title.
Is it like you go to a restaurant and you're like, please... Try the salmon. It's slamming.
It's slamming. I have a question, Dan. Did we watch the movie Slammin' Salmon today? Because why are we talking about it?
We did not. Because it's stuck in my head. It's one of those. It's one of those movies that I've never seen and never will see. But the title will stay in my head forever.
Okay.
Like
those Magnificent Men and their flying machines.
Yeah. Or that. What was that fucking? Bingo Long's Traveling All-Stars or something like that.
Hi, everybody. I'm Justin McElroy.
I'm Travis McElroy.
I'm Griffin McElroy.
And we host the first podcast ever made, My Brother, My Brother and Me.
Every Monday, we put out the first ever advice comedy podcast ever.
They found our podcast on Dead Sea Scrolls.
We're the Hammurabi Code of podcasts, and we're ready to entertain you with jokes that we invented, the first jokes.
So join us every Monday on MaximumFun.org.
You'll never crack our code, Dan Brown. Just try me.
It's history in the making.
And in the faking. And it's all yours for the taking.